great to be here, and I certainly appreciate the invitation. And I also want to extend my thanks to Tom Brink, who will be following up to agree to participate with me this morning in this discussion. So in light of time, I also have my iPhone and going to start the timer to make sure that I don't use up my colleague's time later also. So today what I want to do is just sort of come in and take a second look at a white paper that I did in talking about crossbreeding and considerations and alternatives in an evolving market. It was interesting, some of the feedback that kind of has occurred over time. And I remember very clearly one day this past fall, driving home with my daughter. We had just been to a Titans-Colts game, and I assured her that Colt McCoy, she had just witnessed Colt McCoy win a game in overtime, and probably the best quarterback that we'll ever see in the NFL. That remains to be seen. But as I was driving home, I remember receiving on my phone an email from a producer, a very lengthy and very scathing email, who was questioning many of the observations that were made in the white paper, and really, in effect, I think sort of saying, you know, in that we're somehow duping producers, and in that there's even an alternative to crossbreeding. And so I think that's important as we frame this discussion that goes forward today. I read it as the discussion of being a debate. I'm not sure that's really the right term. I don't like that term. I'd rather think of it as an examination as to why producers are doing what they're doing. What's the collective decision making that's going on out there among producers and within the commercial sector? And I think that's, you know, we can explain some of those things pretty readily. I think it's important that we remind ourselves that, right, not every producer is the same. There's a lot of diverse types of priorities. There's certainly much more differentiated marketing opportunities than there used to be, and I'll talk about that. And so sometimes I'm a little concerned, you know, if we make a one-size-fits-all, and that's not that we're trying to do that, but that's important that we address that. So back to my story and the email, the hate mail, if you will, right? I encouraged the person to go back and read the white paper, because one of the things that's highlighted is not a promotion of one thing versus another. It's that we encourage producers, right, to comprehensively consider relationships of around traits of economic importance, you know, within the context of current market signals, and be strategic about all their breeding decisions. Whatever it is, let's make sure that they dig in and are thinking about that. And that's ultimately the ultimate objective is, let's frame the discussion for commercial producers and let them make a very objective decision as we go forward. So, again, I think it's more about the examination than a debate. Now, one of the big issues, obviously, in here, and we probably that need to talk about is certainly the whole issue of reproduction and longevity, because that's come up since the white paper. And I think that's a hugely important issue, right? We understand that is key to profitability and certainly very important. Heterosis is this huge boost, very important boost to reproductive performance at the commercial level. And so with that, conversely, if we're doing more straight breeding and we're giving up hybrid vigor in the commercial cow herd, then I think it's probably we could find some indicators of reduced reproductive performance along the way. Now, what's frustrating about our business, it's very hard to get really good, meaningful field data out there, right? That's one of the things that probably as an industry we really need to do a better job of. And, you know, you look at some of the USDA data, you know, right now we pregnancy check less than one-fifth of the cows, and even among larger herds, you know, around half. And so what we have to do if we're going to kind of assess the reproductive trends, we need to kind of take an indirect route and maybe look at some of the bigger, broader indicators. Now, the next slide, with that said, is a little bit busy. There's a lot of data, but this comes from the Kansas Farm Management Association. This is some brand new data updated in 2013. And what you see there is moving five-year averages. So these are not snapshots. These are five-year averages updated every single year. Now, the one thing that you can see, the yellow line, is clearly one thing we've done in this business is we've gotten better at making them bigger, right? weaning weight has gone up. Now, the other thing that's also interesting is that we've, as you would expect, that cow herds have gotten slightly larger as we see some consolidation and largely the smaller size operators, and we've gotten bigger. But along with that trend, the marketing rate of calves has remained relatively steady with that. So in other words, the number of calves sold per the number of cows maintained has not declined, and meanwhile we've increased weaning weight. Now, I know that's not a perfect indicator, but if we've lost reproductive performance over time, and I would say that KFMA data is fairly representative of most operations in the United States, a fairly sizable database, then you know we've done fairly well there for commercial producers. This is another busy slide, but maybe a secondary look at that is, you know, boy, if we're having trouble getting cows bred because of genetics over time, the solution is we're going to keep back more heifers because we've got to somehow fill the void and fill that pipeline. And so if you look at the decline, year-over-year declines in cow numbers over the last, you know, since 97, since we really began liquidation, the number one cause of that has been the culling of cows. Now, you could say that's due to any number of reasons, okay? But I'm guessing that most of that's fairly intentional, and that includes drought, okay? And by the way, the correlation there is 0.87. And then what happens is those that still have cows have maintained an incredibly steady rate of heifer retention at about 18%. That just has not changed. And by the way, that correlation is 0.22. So in other words, the decline in cow numbers has been very intentional because of selling, but those that stayed in the business have maintained a relatively steady turnover of cows, as indicated by the heifer retention rate. And so, you know, we have to begin to ask ourselves, are we really causing a lot of problems out there? Now, again, longevity and reproduction, hugely important. I recognize that. But it's not any more important than any other trait that we cull cows for. If we're going to sell a cow because she's open, it's equally important. If we're going to sell her because she had a bad udder, she has a bad eye, she prolapsed, she broke down, she stifled. At the end of the day, if we're going to talk about profit and what we invest, and by the way, a huge duration risk when we invest in a cow, it affects net present value equally. They're all of equal importance. When we start talking about a return on investment and trying to assess some measure of net present value. So I think those are important things as we start talking about this and going through this. Now, in my proceedings, I also kind of shifted gears, and I want to do that fairly quickly and begin to kind of talk about the business also. I think this is really important. And you know, I always, wherever I go, always like to talk about the history of beef demand and beef expenditures and what have you. You know, one of the things that really has changed our business is certified beef programs, right? And, you know, we had this response and has been huge since 2000 where we recognized we had problems. And as we had Dr. Woods just up here talking about how great our business is, and it is amazing what we've done over time, we've really done that. And, you know, what's interesting is a long time ago, as I went through college, and yes, that was a long time ago, we talked a lot about value-based marketing. We got all excited about it. You know, I always like to play it as big talk, little do. We really didn't do a lot about it at that time. And so we needed a new emphasis. And so what's happened is we have. We've encouraged a whole number of new certified programs in the business. Now, it took us about 20 years since CAB first came into existence to create 10 new programs. 10 new programs. In that time since, 14 years, we've established 129 separate new programs. Now, some of those are the same companies with different delineations, but nonetheless, they are programs according to USDA. Over 80% of those are Angus. Now, I know that's, right, that's probably part of the issue of the debate, is that's a predominant issue right here as we talk about this. But that is the reality of the business. Again, that's examination as to the why. Okay? It is what it is. Now, we may not always like that message, but that is the case that goes on. And with that, I think it's very important that perception is reality. What's happened is that has trickled down. People recognize Angus programs, and so you begin to look at other sectors in National Beef Quality Audit. How do you define genetics? Primarily black hide. That doesn't mean Angus, but that's the reality, right? Black hide, black hide, black hide, and you get over to quality genetics. And then we begin to talk about genetic potential for marbling, British, what have you. But the reality is this has had a business, an impact on our business wherever we go. Whether we're crossbreeding, straight breeding, whatever we're doing, we've definitely seen response in that as we start to move towards more black-hided cattle. Now, you can say, well, those aren't necessarily Angus. Okay, that's another debate for a different day. But it is a very real pressure that is being sent, a signal being sent out there to commercial producers. What's especially important about that, though, is that that simultaneously has come along with some selection for marbling. We've increased, improved, which I'll talk about in a little more detail in a little bit, the marbling prevalence in the United States slaughter mix. We're having more cattle, grade choice and prime. And then as you look at that, you say, well, that's not really important. No, it's hugely important. For as much as we don't like the quality grade system, because there used to be a lot of inconsistencies, but as we move to camera-based technology, we see that that delineation and eating quality, some work that came out of CSU, is hugely important. Now, what's interesting, though, is you talk about that, the secondary aspects of that and that research is fascinating. Actually, just did I do a weekly industry at a glance feature for Beef Magazine, and this is up this week, is the A stamp rate delineated by quality grade. And as we move to higher quality grades, the A stamp rate goes up. So conversely, you know, it's not necessarily causation, but conversely, the correlation is as A stamp rate goes up, there will be a higher rate of better eating quality, more eating satisfaction because quality grade is higher. So those are important signals. That's happening. That's the reality of our business as we go forward. Now, with that said, as I begin kind of wind down here, we have improved quality grade in this business dramatically. Meanwhile, we've also gotten better at making cattle more productive and more efficient along the way. And so you say, what about the market signals? Well, if you look at what's happened in terms of the premiums relative to select, okay, and if you look at the bottom two lines, it's choice, commodity choice, and then branded products, which is all choice, okay? And you could say, well, those lines are relatively flat over time. And you see a little bit of dip as we get into the financial crisis, and then they've kind of come back, and you say, well, those are exactly where they were back in 2003. Yes, they are exactly where they are. But the number of branded beef sales or the volume of branded beef sales has doubled over time. So the notional value of beef going into branded programs has essentially doubled. There's increased demand. That is increased demand. We are shifting demand up and to the right for branded beef programs, more volume at a higher price, or even at an equal price. That's amazing. Now, what's also interesting, if you look even at the higher end, which is incredible to me how this beef industry has responded following the financial crisis. It's one of the greatest success stories there is out there. I'm amazed by it. Look at the choice or the prime premium. We continue to establish higher highs. And when you start talking about getting a premium at $60 a hundred for an 800-pound carcass or a 900-pound carcass, I spent a couple hours in a 30,000-head feed yard yesterday, and, you know, 900-pound carcasses are not unusual. That begins to matter to the bottom line hugely. And that's a huge signal that producers are hearing. They're getting that, whether it's directly or indirectly, they know it. So I think as kind of wrap up here, the question always becomes, you know, we're talking about production and profit, but we also have to recognize there is an issue of economic efficiency and production efficiency. And sometimes, as I know, as animal scientists, we're trained about production efficiency, but we have to keep in mind that other side of that. And I think that answer probably differs for every operation depending upon the priorities. And as we talk about this, right, it's not just always the direct costs. It's within your operation, what are your indirect costs? What are your opportunity costs? What else are you dealing with that maybe is costing you somewhere else? And those are very hard to get your finger on for every operation because they all differ. But I like how Darrell Peel, Oklahoma State University, puts it. What really matters is economic efficiency, which can be thought of as the value of the outputs relative to the value of inputs. And so with that, just as we talk about this whole issue, I think it's important that, you know, the dynamics of this business are changing very rapidly. Sometimes not as rapidly as we would like, but they are changing, and they're certainly becoming much more complex. There's a lot more information getting thrown at producers about what to do, how to do it, where to do it. And so with that being said, I don't think anybody ever takes away the benefits of heterosis and crossbreeding. It's huge. And so with that, well-designed, systematic crossbreeding systems are hugely valuable to a producer and an industry. But I think there's also evolving market signals that are happening that are certainly influencing management priorities out there. And sometimes as we talk about, are producers getting duped? You know, are we duping producers out there in the industry? I don't know. I mean, I think they understand their operational priorities. They certainly recognize these new opportunities. And the other thing that's hugely important is the production capability of current genetics has changed dramatically in the last 25 to 30 years that allow producers some versatility that maybe they didn't have 30 years ago. And so with that in mind, I think it's important we kind of shift it a little bit away from debate as to more examination and what's going on. So with that, am I okay? With that, thank you very much for your time, and I would like to introduce Mr. Tom Brink, who will be following up. Thank you.